Online Trading Academy's core strategy is patented and built on the timeless principles of supply and demand. Text Cairo to 57682 to learn how you can trade stocks using this patented core strategy. Text Cairo to 57682.
This is our number
2222222222.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
That's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. I'm getting a lot of emails and texts, and I got to tell you, Eddie Money, I'm trying to think of an interview I've enjoyed more. That might be, it certainly is one of my favorite interviews of all time.
That is saying a lot considering how long you've been on the air.
It might be my favorite. He was just awesome.
My girlfriend Tracy just sent me a text and said, I think that might be Dory's best interview ever.
Really? That's very sweet of Tracy.
Yes.
Well, he was fantastic. And the fact that he knew about the show and that his buddies out here.
That's awesome.
Told him how excited they were that he was
so
coming
cool.
on the show. He was good.
So down to earth, too.
I love when they're on their game like that for an interview because, you know, I'm sure he was doing a lot of interviews and he was in the moment.
I didn't know what to expect. I had no idea. I just know that I sat and watched an insane amount of MTV in the early days and he was one of the dominant guys there. And it was another one of those in the midst of it. I've had these moments a lot, especially lately. Where if you had told me when I was a 17-year-old loser watching MTV for 10 hours a day, you can talk to that guy.
That's just so cool.
If you told the 17-year-old me that, come on.
Do you Eddie Money is even better than your Olivia Newton-John?
Oh, yeah.
President Trump interview?
Trump was pretty good. Trump was pretty good. Who else be on the all-time since you've started? On the all-time best guest. Arsenio's always really good. Arsenio Hall.
Really good this
We've had
last
him
time.
A couple of times.
I don't know. Man, every day is a new day here. I can't think back.
And then going way back before Nicole, J.R. Ewing, Larry Hagman.
Oh, yeah.
Larry Hagman was one of the all-time best as he tried to convince me during commercial breaks that he couldn't believe that I'd never used LSD. And then he...
Did he allow you to talk about that since he was talking about it during... Did you talk about that after you got out of break?
Well, yeah. And I said, this is like an otherworldly experience. I'm sitting here and J.R. Ewing is trying to turn me on. But
so to speak.
Well, but that was the LSD
phrase.
And then he goes... Well, and he's giving me this advice during commercials. He goes, well, if you don't want to use LSD... ecstasy is an LSD precursor. And he's given me all this advice. And then during the interview, because he was in Seattle, and he since has passed, but he was in Seattle because he was promoting organ transplants.
That's right.
Yeah, he drank his liver to death. And he was telling me how he would drink five bottles of champagne on the set of Dallas. But he also used every drug you can imagine. But he was a big fan of LSD.
So then he was thinking, why not have Dory join me
why
in my misery?
Turn on Monson, yeah. And he was talking, and this was on the air. He was talking, I sure wish I still had that interview. I don't think we archived that. That was from a long time ago. But I said, you are talking with such passion about LSD. Larry, you got to explain this to me because I've never even smoked weed, but why are you so passionate about it? And he said, do you believe in God? I said, yeah. Imagine if God had a God. That would be LSD.
But look where it got him. So anyone listening to
this. Oh, I'm not advocating for it.
Oh, my word, yeah.
I'm not advocating for it. But I'm telling you, that's a great interview guest. When he drops stuff like that on you, if God had a God, he's acknowledging his own drug use. And he admitted, he said, yeah, my and he stopped using those drugs, the ecstasy and LSD, because he said, I'm an addictive personality. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. But he was great. He was one of the best ever because we talked about his salary disputes, and he was fantastic.
But yesterday, thinking about Eddie Money, I mean, there's no way you were going to think that that was going to be one of your all-time best interviews.
No, I didn't know that he was going to bring it like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's...
I remember the first time you talked. I think we've had Mike Love on twice, and the first time was really good where he told all those stories.
Yeah.
That one was a good one. And then David Spade recently. Remember that one? We were like, wow, we didn't expect that.
David Spade was great. Yeah, we've had a lot of good ones.
Suzanne Summers, that was a good one.
Eh. Oh, she's pretty good.
She was pretty good.
She was okay. That's but great. Eddie Money! Man, okay, we got to move on here. We got a lot of news to talk about here in the Fastest 15.
You just call us. Where are they now, Dory?
I was praising an hour ago newspapers, but and I said the Times is having a lot of trouble, but it'd be devastating journalistically if newspapers go away. But I will tell you, when I see this headline in the Seattle Times today, Seattle taxes ranked most unfair in Washington, a state among the harshest on the poor nationwide. And then you start, that's the headline, and it's stated as fact. And then you get into the story, and it's a report published by the far-left Economic Opportunity Institute here in Seattle. And even the Times in the story labels it a liberal think tank. And it is like a radical liberal think tank. And what the story says is that a household earning $25,000 in Seattle winds up paying 17% of its income in taxes, and high income pays 4.4%. Now, what they don't mention is that low-income households pay a higher percent of their income for food, for housing, for smartphones, for cigarettes. I mean, for everything. Everything they purchase is a higher percentage of their income. And to not label the radical nature of the group that published that report and the story of this Economic Opportunity Institute is it is an organization, and their reason for being is they want an income tax here in Washington. And that is what this group has been dedicated to achieving. And so for the Times to just print a headline as fact and not even couch the headline that, you know, liberal group says or radical think tank says, and they just state it as fact in the headline, that's very deceptive. And so when you see this story, you now know who's behind it. It is a group that wants an income tax in Washington. And a headline that states something is fact when it comes from a, you know, very far left organization.
Does it matter to you, though, that this one was written by Gene Balk, who is a Seattle Times columnist?
Well, yeah, he's their FYI guy.
Which I think he puts out a lot of really interesting things, but you have to realize he's...
He does. I find his stuff to be interesting. I just think that you, if it comes from a really, and I guarantee if it came from a far right wing group, they would mention that in the, or they wouldn't state it as fact. They would state it as the opinion of a pretty radical right wing group. And like I said, they mention it in the body of the story, but consider the source when you hear stories like that. Next up in the big Fastest 15, for crying out loud. That was fake news right there. In the Fastest 15. So my Aunt Sissy, who lived in Ballard, she worked for the top wedding photographer in Seattle, a guy named Otto Motal.
He did our wedding photographs.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
We've talked about that
mm-hmm.
before.
Mm-hmm.
And Otto just passed away a couple of years ago. I always called him Uncle Otto. He was a really quirky guy. And my Aunt Sissy, I always thought they should marry because Otto was single his whole life. Sissy was single most of her adult life.
Well, and his house was in Ballard.
Right,
right?
On
I mean,
the...
Yeah.
corner of 68th right. and 32nd.
In fact, that's where we picked out our wedding photos.
I bet. What year did you get married?
Oh, 1993.
Okay.
I had to think about it.
I got married in 87.
Okay.
No, I bet you worked with my Aunt
Sissy. That's crazy.
Did they have all the pictures splayed out on the dining room table there? Yeah.
It probably
that
was
Sissy.
Your aunt.
Yeah, she was the only person who worked for him, I think. But the thing Otto would do at Christmas time, he would always drive down to the Oh Boy Oberto factory down in South Seattle or SoTo or wherever it was, and he would buy me a big pillow pack of pepperoni ends, because I just love them. Oh, man, did I love pepperoni ends. And I bring this up because Oh Boy Oberto has been sold to a Richmond, B.C. holding company. Oberto has its head. Oh, it's down in Kent. I don't know if it was in Kent back then. They have nearly 500 employees, and it says that the sale is going to mean all of the assets and operating divisions of Oberto is expected to close in 4 to 6 weeks. And Art Oberto is the guy who's, you know, took over, I think, from his dad, and has run the company for decades and decades. But it sounds like it's shutting down.
Oh, boy.
Huh?
Sorry, that was Oh Boy from Quantum Leap. I searched high and low for a really great audible Oh Boy from Sam Beckett, and that's what I found
that
on short notice.
That was only mediocre.
Yeah.
Oh Boy Oberto, shutting down after a century in business. So another Seattle area.
Oh, they've had that retail store on Rainier Avenue.
That's the one I was thinking about.
Yeah.
That's where Otto would go.
Big Oh Boy Oberto sign right there in the... Aw.
And they're closing.
And protein, and like those protein snacks are a big thing right now. Why are they closing?
Well,
I think they're just being taken over, so they're just closing down the competition.
That's too bad.
Place that bought
yeah,
it.
But speaking of another, you know, Seattle icon, Oh Boy Oberto.
Exactly. The PI laid off most of its people yesterday. Oberto's going bye-bye. Next up in the Fastest 15, I will admit, I've talked about this on the show before, I have never understood people assigning praise or blame to TV weathercasters for the forecast. It's, oh, Steve's got a great forecast for us tonight, don't you, Steve? No, it's nature. But a forecaster in Grand Rapids, Michigan, he finally has had it with this trend. Have you heard this yet?
No.
Okay. They've had a rough winter in Grand Rapids. And so every day he does the forecast, and it's a morning news show, so it's a little more chit-chatty. And the newscasters, when he, you know, gives the 3-day or the 7-day forecast, they always go, oh, really? Is that the best you can do for us? And apparently Gary Frank just got sick and tired of being blamed by his fellow newscasters for the weather. And so he finally lost it on air yesterday.
I think it's going to be a fine.
Good.
You know, it'll be fine.
All right.
Could be worse.
Yeah.
Has been worse. Well, because you guys are dragging me down. You guys keep... Well, every time I get done with the 7-day, you guys are like, oh, gosh. Oh. Every time. Doesn't matter what time I come on, 4:30, 5:30, 6:30, and then you expect me to be chipper for 5 straight hours. It's miserable. I want you guys to say, wow, that's great news. It's going to be 60 on Friday. Well, I mean, what do you want me to do? Lie to you? I'll put 70 every day next time. God.
Thank you for your commitment.
Man, thank you. Mr. Davis appreciates it. He knows when to bundle up.
Yep.
Here's some wind. Here's some temperature. 20s. Feels like 19 or feels like 70. I don't know. 47, partly cloudy. Southwest breeze 10 to 15. Here's a 60. I don't know if that's good enough for you guys. Get excited. Maybe I'll disappoint you with the 7-day here in a few minutes.
Ooh.
Is he done? That was terrifying. The internet would put it this way. That was terrifying.
That was the traffic guy. That was terrifying.
He's had it.
I mean, he starts pointing out like, okay, I don't care. 10 degrees, 70 degrees.
Yeah. If that'll make you happy, I'll just lie to you. I kind of like that guy.
You don't think that was staged?
I'm sure it was.
I mean, because I'm thinking.
But I'm not sure. Because the mics aren't on the news
people.
Yeah,
I know, right. So you can only barely hear them.
They're all talking off, Mike. Wait a second. We have some breaking news on Oh Boy Oberto, Nicole.
Well, I'm still waiting for clarification, but Felix Bunnell just messaged me and said it's closing as in the sale is closing, but they might not actually be closing.
Oh, the company's not closing?
Well, we're double checking because now Felix is saying that it's just closing as in the sale.
The sale of the company is closing. Okay, apparently. Well, maybe we can still get the Oh Boy Oberto pepperoni.
They'll probably change the name.
It'll just be manufactured by Premium Brands Holdings in Richmond, B.C. Now, Canadians taking over, for crying out loud. Okay, yeah, we're getting texts, too. They are not closing. All 500 workers will keep their jobs. It is just the sale of the business that is closing. Some more fake news by me, for crying out loud. Okay, next up in the Festus 15, a former Miami Dolphins cheerleader says she was harassed and discriminated against because of her Christian faith. Her name is Kristen Ann Ware, and she says if you want to be an NFL cheerleader, there is a double standard.
I guess it is kind of a double standard, you know, where the football players are held to and then what women are held to in the NFL.
And the reason this came up was they were talking, all the cheerleaders, all the Dolphin cheerleaders, we're talking about the best song to have sex to. And Kristen Ann said, well, I'm a Christian and I'm a virgin and I'm going to save myself for marriage.
I sat down at an interview with the director and all of my coaches. And, you know, they said, let's talk about your virginity. And I was automatically kind of shocked because it's linked to, you know, my vow to God and the ring that I wear that symbolizes true love waits. And, you know, she then said, well, as far as we're concerned, you've taken something that was once upon a time pure and beautiful, and you've made it dirty.
And she says that it crushed her spirit to change into a bikini after everybody cast her in such a negative way that she felt vulnerable. And why did they handle it this way?
I don't know, but I knew that it hurt me. And I started tearing up. And then to which I was told that, you know, I was too emotional, too sensitive, and I needed to develop into a woman. Mm-hmm. And that I also needed to find a switch. You know, I could be who I was, I guess, somewhere else, but within these walls, I have to turn it off. I have to be someone different.
She said that she had been told, don't talk about God. Conversations about God are removed from the cheerleader blog. And she said she's been treated with harassment and abuse and mocking because of her religion. And we had the story yesterday on the show about the UW professor who was seemingly horribly discriminated against because of her Christian faith. But, that's the one group that seems to be okay to openly discriminate against. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
If you give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. As we mentioned, the Seattle PI laid off most of its remaining staffers. They only have 5 left. Should they just shut down the website? A guy who worked for the newspaper, the Post-Intelligencer, is now on our sister station, 710 ESPN Seattle, and we'll talk to Jim Moore about all of that coming up next. Well, as we told you in the big lead, it looks like the end is near for the Seattle PI, the Post-Intelligencer, battling the times. It was one of the great newspaper towns in America. The PI came in the morning. The Times came in the afternoon. And I have some exciting professional memories involving the Seattle PI. A guy who spent most of his career at the Seattle PEI. You hear him every afternoon on our sister station, 710 ESPN Seattle. Danny, Dave, and Moore, the great Jim Moore joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Hello, Jim.
Well, thank you for that introduction. I don't know if I've ever been called great before. I think my dog is the only one who thinks I'm great, but yeah. Now you do too. Thank you, Dory. I appreciate that.
That was more intended as irony.
Well, I just took it anyway. Yeah, so that's what the right. heck? But no, yeah, you know, like you, I grew up reading the PI too, Dory.
And then you grew up professionally working at the PI, right?
Well, I did. You know, when I got out of WSU in 78, I went up to Ketchikan in Anchorage and worked at newspapers there. And then when I think I was 25 years old in 82, and I worked at the PI for 26 years. And my dream when I was growing up in Redmond was I read the PI sports section all the time with John Owen and Royal Brougham and Lenny Anderson. And I thought, man, I want to work for the PI someday. And it was, I was thrilled to have a chance to do that and to work there for 26 years.
And what were the beats that you covered in your time there?
Oh, boy, I did a little bit of everything. I did a lot of high school stuff, but primarily the one thing that I really wanted to do was cover the Sonics, because the Sonics came to town when I was 10 years old, and I used to sit in my room there in Redmond, and I'd keep score and listen to Bob Blackburn, the first play-by-play guy for the team. And I just loved that first team, that expansion team in 67, 68. And I thought, man, you know, I know I'm not good enough to be a professional athlete, and I'd like to have a career in sports. And I thought it'd be fun to cover the Sonics. And I ended up doing that from 90 to 96. And they were really good years with the Sonics. They were winning 55 plus every day. And almost won the NBA championship in 96.
Yep. Well, and it was a great newspaper town. The Times and the PI had a pretty good rivalry going. And if somebody had told you back at the peak of the PI when you were working there, if somebody had told you that it would essentially be shuttered, and I know they still have six people left at the website now, but that's it after the layoffs this week. I'm guessing that would have just seemed unthinkable 30 years ago.
Well, yeah. No, it was a good rivalry for quite a while, and we were the plucky underdog, and I liked the way the PI approached things. We kind of had a different style than the Times. We always looked at the Times as being the stodgy paper in town, and that we were a little out of the box doing different things. And I honestly thought, now we've been closed, the newspaper closed down 9 years ago, March 17th, which every St. Patrick's Day I always think, man, this should be a time when I'm going out drinking green beer and having a good time. But it's always a memory of a really bad day for all of us who worked at the PI when the newspaper closed. But yeah, there was a time, Dory, when I thought it was a really good rivalry. It was a hot competition between the PI and the Times. And I honestly thought we were going to be the underdog that was going to pull off the upset and be the only paper remaining in town, and it didn't quite work out that way.
No. Well, I've told you before, Jim, that I've always been very fond of you because you in the PI were the first person to ever mention my radio career, and that that meant so much to me, Jim. I was at King 1090, which it's kind of like the PI versus the Times. I was at King 1090, a radio station nobody listened to. We were going up against the big dog Cairo, and the Apple Cup was coming up, and we had the Cougars, and I think the Huskies were on Como at the time. And you were writing a sports media column, and you didn't know who I was, but you said, "You listen, take your pick, listen to Bob Rondo on Como or Bob Robertson on King 1090, but for the post-game show, listen to Dory Monson on King 1090. His Letterman-like humor makes it go." I'll never forget
wow.
how you phrased it. It was the sweetest thing anybody did to me in the very embryonic stage of my career.
Well, I'm happy you remember that, Dory. And I really, you know, I wish to this day that someone wrote a sports media column, a local sports media column that would you know, talk about the Root Sports broadcasters, or, you know, talk about people at 710 and at KJR and all the different sportscasters in town. Cause I really enjoyed doing that. And I think, I mean, we're all, if we're sports fans, we know all these people, especially, you know, the Mariners, the Seahawks, all these people are in our living rooms or family rooms all the time. And, I wish someone would do that now, because I really had a fun time doing that.
Yeah. Well, and you also wrote the column, or it was a long piece about sports talk radio that got me in more trouble than anything I've ever done in my life. You got me to badmouth.
Well, why was that?
You got me to badmouth Wayne Cote in this article.
Oh, I did?
Yeah. And I remember.
Well, was it on the record or off the record? I didn't violate your trust, did I?
No, you didn't. I was sitting in the living room of this little shanty, a one-bedroom, one-bath shanty that my wife and I lived in. And I'm talking to you on the phone, and Wayne Cote was on Cairo, of course, and KJR had just gone wall-to-wall sports, and I had my little rinky-dink Saturday night sports talk show on King 1090. And you decide to include me in the article, and I am just bad-mouthing Wayne Cote. And I said, yeah, all this is off the record, Jim. And my wife is sitting in the living room whispering at me, and she goes, don't be such a wimp. Go on the record. Go on the record. And I go, go ahead and use all of it. And when I finally got hired here at Cairo, Jim, Wayne Cote wouldn't talk to me because of this article that you had written 3 years earlier.
Well, what exactly did you say? Because Wayne Cote, he was never boring. He was always an interesting guy. I always, I loved watching him on TV, and he did the Sonics for a while, and then he yep. did the Sportsline show there at Cairo for several years, I think. And I always got a kick out of him, but I can't remember exactly what you said.
Well, I was a punk. I was a punk just to try to get attention when, I mean, I would have been one line in the story, and instead you made me the centerpiece of the story because I called him lazy, and I just didn't have any respect. And I now look at his career as one of the most phenomenal careers in Seattle broadcasting. But I was a punk, and I wanted attention, and I got it. And you just fed right into that, Jim.
Well, yeah, I was just looking for something to put a headline on the story, I guess, Dory. And, can I apologize to you many years later?
It no,
sounds like
it was
you
fine.
Worked it out, though.
No, it worked out very well for me. But enough about me. So the PI, all these layoffs this week, it's a website with about five people working at it now. Is that it? Is that all that's left?
Yeah, from what I understand, there's five writers left and one photographer, and it's just I have a hard time with it, because when the paper closed, they kept it going, and they wanted to have a regular news operation just online, just without the actual newspaper, and so everything was going digital. And I think it worked for a little while. It seemed to. I know Art Thiel and I were writing sports columns for a while, and they at least stayed afloat. But boy, lately it's just become a shell of what it used to be. And I go to the site, and I think it's time just to shut it completely down, because whatever you used to think of the Seattle PI and seattlepi.com, it's not that anymore. And I understand I'm 60 years old, and so I don't get a lot of this stuff that they're doing, but it's kind of, I don't know, Dory, I feel like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, because typically when I used to write columns, you'd write columns that you wanted people to read, and now you look at it, it's almost like, you know, this clickbait.
Yeah.
You're looking for different things that'll go viral, and it just seems like there's more value in the outrageous, stupendous, sensationalized stuff rather than the hard news type things that we used to focus on that were so important to newspapers.
Yeah, I know. And I do think the newspapers are still an essential part of, you know, being watchdogs of government, and they can go more in depth than we can in radio. They can assign a reporter to a story for a few days and do investigative pieces. And we are going to be the worse off if newspapers die completely. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting, though. I was reading the Seattle Times. Now, they're not doing well either, and they lost more than 20 people last year, but they've done some studies, and they've found that some of their in-depth stories have driven more subscriptions than those the ones that go viral, and that they're finding that people will tend to sign up for subscriptions more often if they do these in-depth stories than they do the crazy ones that go viral. And that was encouraging to me, but I don't know, Dory, you know, I mean, I'll walk into a Starbucks and I look around, and if anyone has a newspaper, they're usually 50 years old or up.
Yeah.
I don't see anybody 25 or 30 reading a paper anymore.
No, they're all buried in their phones, that's for sure. Well, it's sad for those of us who grew up with a good, vibrant two-newspaper town. You were fortunate you got to spend so much of your career there, Jim.
Yeah, I feel that way too, Dory. And, you know, honestly, it's I look back and I thought, man, I hope I can retire at the PI. It's probably, for me personally, it's probably been a good thing to, I feel really fortunate to have been hired over there at 710. And so, you know, I have in my mind that it would have been this storybook ending and retiring at the newspaper, and it probably wouldn't have been like that. So it was good for me to get out of my comfort zone and get into radio. But I do every March 17th. I kind of it saddens me to know that the PI is not around anymore.
And I agree with you. It's time to shudder it. All right, there you have it. The great Jim Moore joining us. Jim, glad you came on with me this afternoon.
All right, thanks for having me, Dory.
All right, Jim Moore, you can hear him every afternoon. Danny David Moore, 3 to 7 on our sister station, 710 ESPN Seattle. And we have lots more straight ahead on the Dory Monson Show. Thanks for listening to the Dory Monson Show podcast, brought to you by Industrious Office. Industrious Office is just an amazing workspace right in the heart of downtown Seattle, right on 6th and Lenora, right where everything Seattle has to offer is on your doorstep. And at Industrious, you can start with the right size office and then scale up as your team grows. Go to industriousoffice.com/Cairo, schedule a tour, mention Cairo, receive your first month lease for free.
Hi, I'm Tina Sorensen, General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio. When Cairo Radio listeners miss their favorite show, they find it on demand. Maybe you should be advertising here. Give me a call and I'll help you out. 206-726-6819.
Got some breaking news. The Seattle Seahawks may have solved their problem at kicker. They have just signed Sebastian Janikowski, who has spent 17 years with the Oakland Raiders. He's had more games played than any player in the history of the Raiders. Sebastian Janikowski, 40 years old, but still has some left in the tank. He came out a couple days ago for a tryout. Seahawks just signed him. I have an incredible homelessness story to tell you in the big lead next.